My name is Jamie Shulock. I am 47 years old. Today is January 16th, and I'm speaking with my father, Joseph Shulock. We are recording this interview in Tallahassee, Florida. So, Dad, what circumstances led you to smoking?
Well, it didn't actually start smoking until well past the time most kids did start. When was that? That was in 1966 or 7, because I don't know the academic year.
What was going on during that time?
The Vietnam War, and I'm in Peace Corps. And I had smoked with your mom, but on and off, very little. It wasn't a habit or anything like that. I went to have my knee operation, and Fontan smoked all over the place anyway. So I got a fair taste of it. And
so you were in Micronesia and you had knee surgery?
I had knee surgery. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I went to have my first knee surgery, I was a single Peace Corps volunteer in a ward with 90 wounded Marines, and the riverboat captains, and I forget what the frogmen, kind of river rats.
So you're in a hospital ward with some soldiers from the Vietnam War. Yeah. Where were you at that time? Was that on Phnom Penh?
Yeah. Well, I don't. That was the Guam Naval Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so I went to that, and I'm looking around, and it's a couple of memorable things that I'll never forget. Number one was in my Peace Corps group, I was the youngest one there. Mm-hmm. And I was 21. Right? Mm-hmm. In the military side of the group, I was the oldest one there. Mm-hmm. So you just had this different generation bounding through.
So all of these soldiers were younger than you in the ward?
Oh, yeah. And many of them would come up and say, you know, I was thinking about joining the Peace Corps and this and that. And why did you come? Why did you decide, well, there's the draft, that's an obligation, citizenship. You know, real easy, sensible statements having to do with citizenship.
What about that experience drove you to smoke or led to your smoking?
Nervous, just totally nervous about things. I'm halfway down the ward. Mm-hmm. It's like an oval. Kind of board. And I'm sitting down there, and across the aisle from me, in comes this master sergeant, just giving everybody hell. Mm-hmm. Right? Just, what are you doing here? You want a tin cup? I'm taking you up there, show you to him, see if we can get rid of you somehow, because you guys aren't representing the United States, that kind of stuff. Really tough. And when he finished, he said, you guys think you got the problems. Think about this guy here. He's coming into somebody's country, not to fight a war, not to plunder or any of that stuff. He's coming in to be involved in an exchange between two countries, they're involved trying to help each other. You know? And this and that. And they happen to be using the military side, so this guy can walk out in the jungle again. He says, the other thing is, take it into account their parents. Here are these guys in South Pacific Island. In the South Pacific Island, God knows what they know and what they think is and that, but it's movies and books. And
what's your most memorable experience in that ward?
The master sergeant. He gave this big, long, energetic, loud, description of the situation. And he says, you just, as he walks out, he says, you just think about those parents. And then he looks at me and he winks. So then somebody else came in and started talking about what was going on. And the guy almost got out of the room. I was praying he wouldn't say anything. But he almost walked out of the room when this little tiny voice from behind the mattress cover comes out and says, what about the Peace Corps? That was right. And then that's a memorable. I'm going to try to get what I wrote.
How old were you again at that time?
21.
Yeah. Did you see anybody die when they're in the war?
Yeah. I didn't see them die. There were people that died in the war. The only other person I saw die was a companion, 8-year-old, who died of whooping cough in the first week we were there.
So over the years, how much did you smoke, just on average?
I don't know.
Like a pack a day, half a pack a day?
We do individually half a pack a day, I would think. And then it went up to 2. And stayed at 2 for quite some time. And then it's like 3 years or whatever. And then we went down to 1. Then we're in Maryland. The priest, now.
Not Father McGarry.
Father McGarry comes to visit us, and we had stopped smoking for a month. Mm-hmm. Right? We started smoking again. I said, never. And so the only people who successfully brought us into the smoking arena again was the priest that married us.
So how did you feel about your smoking, and did that change over the years, like at the beginning and then throughout the rest of your adult life?
I'm a pretty good example, very good example, of how you can convince yourself that doesn't necessarily apply to me. I'll figure something out.
How did you feel about your smoking, though?
Lousy. I really did. And I didn't really realize about smoking until the guy in the car, say, went down to from Old Westbury to Mom and Dad's. We didn't smoke there. Went down there, and then for the next 3 or 4 days, we would feel miserable, physically, and mentally too, maybe. Physically. And maybe sometimes at the same time we cut down on coffee, which was not anything I ever drank before I went to Peace Corps. It's in Indiana. I didn't smoke before I went to Indiana. Didn't drink coffee before I went to Indiana. And all of a sudden, a weekend hits. And it's like a block of fudge.
Now, you mentioned that you quit for about a month prior to Father McGarry visiting you in Maryland. Had you ever tried to quit prior?
I think under the side column of, let me see how this works. Mm-hmm. It goes from a terribly long commitment. But I felt I can maintain a policy like others in our planet, a thought that, yes, this is bad. Yes, I shouldn't be doing this for my own good, my kids' own good. And at the same time, somehow I was going to make it through this self-created disaster.
Did you ever consider that you were addicted?
Yeah. when we were in
Old Westbury?
No, it was up. First 3 years, sometime in the first 3 years we were in I was seeing a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. It was about outpatient counseling.
Do you believe your health would be better if you never smoked?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the only explanation I can give for that is, as my health goes down, I realize that more and more, with more appreciation than anything, the connectedness of so many things in our body that we never thought of. You know, and so if something in a system is being influenced by something else in that system, or another system somewhere over there, it can't be good. It can't be good if the thing that's affecting the system is bad health-wise.
Yeah, I mean, your lungs have been pretty resistant to some of the conditions or manifestations of COPD, but they did not, you know, so you've lived 74 years. You're 74 years now. It did not prevent the cancer.
The other aspect of it is family. I had an Uncle Phil. It was a twin brother of my mom's. But she had a twin sister, twin brother. And Uncle Phil lived at 92 and smoked. Probably every day of his life after high school, but probably before high school. And I, somehow or another, he fit into my little self-deception.
But do you blame the tobacco industry for your addiction, either in part or in whole? Do they bear any blame?
Oh, sure.
How is that?
Well, partly because our usual response to something that's gone wrong is the first step is to blame somebody else. Because if you can successfully do that, half of your battle of proving innocence is over.
But if they intentionally enhance your ability to be addicted, would they bear any blame?
Yeah. Yeah, because what are they? Their business? Their business designed to make money off of products known to be unhealthy. That once a person gets involved with that, the chances of disconnecting from alcoholism or addiction are well known to the people who are selling the wine. They're not sitting there saying, oh dear, did anybody realize we were killing people? No, this benign neglect of it, I think this whole thing of benign neglect.
You know, before I came down here, Penelope came to me and said, I know why you became a respiratory therapist. And it was to save your parents, save your dad. Broke my heart. I said, I can't save them.
You can't.
I said, I can't save him.
Well, I can live to the right side, I suppose. There are things that you can always, I always deal with things. I don't know if I always try to view things as, did I just make it better or worse? You know, it's and to have one of your kids, one of your grandkids, tell his dad the doubt he's doing is because of this reason
or that reason.
There's an opportunity to do something that way, and people who see the light.
Mm-hmm.
Right. End up becoming the worst ambassadors of better or worse. Which I think is the strongest of all. Good and bad. Oh, I believe in the middle. And you're firmly placed in the middle. But you know, you could tell finality, that wasn't the first time that you saw of being a respiratory therapist, because there was that one time at Folly Beach,
mm-hmm.
and I was up on the deck and you were down and
mm-hmm. I remember.
I forgot. I remember that forever.
Yeah, I remember. Jeez. I couldn't move. I was almost underwater.
Yeah.
But I could see the deck, and I think the last thing I remember is you running. I think there was an undertow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for saving my life. I appreciate that.
Well, you might do the same for me someday.
I don't know. Alrighty.